Welcome to iHeartRadio Communities, a public affairs special focusing on the biggest issues impacting you this week. Here's Ryan Gorman.
Thanks for joining us here on iHeartRadio Communities. I'm Ryan Gorman, and we have some great conversations lined up for you. In a moment, I'll talk to an official from the Health and Human Services Department about the COVID-19 vaccines. And then I'll be joined by Mayim Bialik, star of Blossom and The Big Bang Theory, for some insight into Brain Health Awareness Week. First, to get things started, I'm joined by Dr. LaShawn McKeever, Director of the Office of Minority Health for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. She's here to talk about COVID-19 as it pertains to Medicaid and Medicare, and also vaccine safety for diverse populations. Dr. McKeever, thanks so much for joining us. Before we dive into all of that, can you give us a general overview of the work your department typically does?
Sure, and thank you so much for having me on your program today. So I serve as the director for the Office of Minority Health at CMS, and our office focuses on the needs of underserved populations. So that relates to racial and ethnic minorities, rural populations, people with sexual and gender minorities, people with limited English proficiencies, and people with disabilities. And our mission is to ensure that their voices are present as our agency is developing its policies and programs related to healthcare. So those are that's the core function of our office at CMS.
So how did the emergence of COVID-19 impact or change the focus of your department?
Well, our target populations were disproportionately impacted by the pandemic early on. And so we began listening sessions to reach out to our stakeholders across the country to try and understand some of the barriers that were impacting them so that as an agency, we could think through what are ways that we could be responsive. That allowed us to create resources that are available on our website, which talk about many aspects of the COVID-19 pandemic and how people seeking care during this time can seek it carefully. We've repurposed and repurposed information from other agencies, federal agencies, to make it more community specific. Some things have been translated into other languages. So it gave us, we took a step back and tried to assess what were the needs of our target populations and what were the things that we could do to help provide some type of assistance or resource as an office within CMS.
Can you go a bit more in detail in terms of some of the items that led those populations to get disproportionately impacted by this pandemic?
Well, one thing that I think there's been a lot of discussion on throughout the pandemic is the impact on the social, the impact of social determinants of health have had on many different communities. So when you think about where people live, where they work, where kids go to school, think about communities in which we live in and the role of social factors that impact our health. Some populations experienced a disproportionate impact due to things in their environment. A lot of essential workers, for example, come from communities wherein they didn't have the option, for example, to telework from home. So they had to go into the workplace, which increased their risk of being exposed. And so when you think about things like the environment and multi-generational homes, for example, wherein people who, for they may be an essential worker and they're going into the workplace, but they're coming home to a multi-generational family and the risk that that presents in these communities. Those are some of the things that come to mind when I think about a barriers that we've seen over time.
I'm joined by Dr. LaShawn McKeever, Director of the Office of Minority Health for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Obviously, the goal everyone is working on now involves vaccinating as many Americans as possible and doing it as quickly as possible. How does confidence in the vaccines affect the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services?
That's a great question. CMS is focused on meeting the needs of underserved populations and, as I said before, racial and ethnic minorities, rural populations, people with disabilities, people with limited English proficiency. We care deeply about every American having access to the information that will lead them to become vaccine competent. And certainly, we believe that those who are caring for our elderly population, many of whom may be older themselves, need to be properly protected from COVID. When it comes to the COVID-19 vaccines, we want to help move that path by providing the vaccine at no cost, by addressing affordability, accessibility, and vaccine hesitancy in that context. Also, when it comes to addressing vaccine hesitancy, we're working in lockstep with the CDC to address questions and concerns around the COVID-19 vaccine. We have hosted a series of online fire chats on vaccine safety aimed at nursing home staff, for example, and our Medicare and Medicaid and Marketplace communication channels are actively engaging our partners across the country and engaging communities about vaccine safety and coverage. We're also working with our state Medicaid agencies to ensure that individuals who are traditionally harder to reach are not left out or behind in this context. We believe that getting the facts about these safe and effective COVID-19 vaccines will help people make informed decisions, and we recognize that getting vaccinated is a personal choice. And so we're helping to put information out there that can help people make the best choice for themselves.
Are there specific types of questions that you get more often than others when it comes to the COVID-19 vaccines?
I would say the primary question that I've heard the most in working with our target populations centers around safety, vaccine safety, like ensuring that it's safe to take the vaccine. And there have been a lot of forums across the country. CDC recently did a town hall, a several-day event that focused on educating providers and public health stakeholders and health systems, just the whole public health and medical workforce on things related to COVID-19, including vaccine safety. People are concerned about the vaccine and the speed at which it was developed, and we've worked on helping to communicate to people that this was done safely and that it is safe to take the vaccine. But that probably is the number one question that I've heard from communities, is fear of if it is safe. The next question that comes up from time to time relates to the cost of the vaccine and will they be able to afford the vaccine. And we can talk about this as we go along, but the vaccine is free. So anyone who is receiving the COVID-19 vaccine should not be charged anything to take the vaccine. And I'm happy to go into more detail as we go along, but I just wanted to share those two points.
Yeah, I want to get to that in a moment. Again, I'm joined by Dr. LaShawn McKeever, Director of the Office of Minority Health for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. She's here to talk about COVID-19 as it pertains to Medicaid and Medicare, and also vaccine safety for diverse populations. Where are we seeing the most hesitancy to get the vaccine? Are there certain demographics that stand out so far?
Well, we're seeing it in different ways. I think, from the work that we're doing, we're definitely seeing some racial and ethnic minority communities. There's some hesitancy there. CMS recently addressed vaccine hesitancy within the healthcare workforce. I talked about some of the fireside chats that we've had that's been led by leadership within CMS with nursing home staff, in which we saw early on that there was a hesitancy in that workforce to receive the vaccine. And as you can imagine, in that setting where you have older adults who are at a higher risk for poor outcomes if infected with COVID-19, that was an important issue early on that we were focused on. So we've seen it in different communities and in communities that we didn't expect. Per se, I think a lot of people thought many medical professionals would be eager to get the vaccine when it emerged. But for example, that was one scenario wherein we saw there was a high level of hesitancy, and so we've been working in partnership across the country to help in working to build vaccine confidence in the nursing home workforce. And we're really excited to see, that evolve.
What approach typically works best when trying to convince someone to get the vaccine?
There are a few things. What I will give an example of is the message coming from a trusted source. So when it comes to vaccine hesitancy, we know that people need to hear from trusted sources within their community. They need to hear the facts about safety, about getting tested, and to hear from people in their community who have received the vaccine and why they did it. We also know that information can be a big challenge for our communities. Getting that communities and getting that information can be all the difference in getting access to what they need. So I'll use myself as an example. We've been encouraged as public health leaders and medical professionals across the country to share our vaccine journey. I'm an African American physician. I'm a mom, I'm a mother, I'm a daughter, I'm a friend, I live in a community. And when it was my turn to get my vaccine, it was important for me to get it. And I shared that experience with those in my life, and it really opened up a rich dialogue for people to explore what their thoughts were and their feelings about the vaccine, and for me to share my experience. So, that idea of hearing it from trusted sources within one's community to address this is an important one. And I would encourage those who have been vaccinated to share their stories within, their community, so that it can help encourage others to become vaccinated or to get vaccinated when it's their time.
I'm joined by Dr. LaShawn McKeever, Director of the Office of Minority Health for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. You mentioned cost a moment ago. It's always something that people are concerned about when it comes to healthcare. So how exactly does that factor in for Medicare beneficiaries and those on Medicaid?
Well, regardless of one's insurance, even if they are uninsured or undocumented as well, there's no cost for the vaccine. And that's an important part for listeners to understand, that there's no cost to get the vaccine. Now, you may be asked for your insurance card if you have one, so that your insurance can be billed. But for a consumer, there should be no cost. And this is regardless of, as I said, your insurance status or what type of insurance you're covered under. In Medicare in particular, this means that no beneficiary should pay a copay deductible for a COVID-19 vaccine. And we want to be clear that our beneficiaries should take their red, white, and blue Medicare card so that their insurance can be billed, just like with any other service, but there's no cost when they're get vaccinated. We've also heard that some places are charging fees, and this should not happen. Like, there should be no money exchanged. In addition, we are cautioning our Medicare beneficiaries against fraud. Some folks have been texted or called and told that if they disclose their Medicare information, that they can get early access to the vaccine. And those types of things, more likely they are definitely a scam. And so we're cautioning people not to give out their Medicare information, over phone, by text, if they're contacted for early access to the vaccine, because that's not correct. That's not permitted. For Medicaid patients, states will pay for vaccine administration without copays as well. Additionally, ensures that most group and individual health insurance plans coverage must cover the COVID vaccine in or out of network during the public health emergency. The administration increased Medicare's reimbursement rates for administering the vaccine. I meant to mention above, but they've increased the rates from about $23 per shot to $40 per shot as it relates to the vaccine itself and how it's being paid for. In addition, the administration is also now covering the cost of the vaccine for Medicaid and chip for 100% of the cost for these groups, as noted. So we're just trying to make sure that people understand they can get the vaccine at no cost, that for Medicare beneficiaries to be aware of scams. And also CMS has put out a lot of information for providers talking about what we're doing that can make the billing more easily understood. We've set up an enrollment hotline for our providers so they can enroll in Medicare, and our online toolkit, which can be found on our website at cms.gov/COVIDVax. And this includes information that Medicare providers can use on enrollment, coding, and billing for COVID-19 vaccine. So a lot of resources are out there to help for those who are helping with this mass vaccination that's happening across the country at the moment. But also it's really important for people to know that the barrier of cost has been removed in this equation. And so we're hoping that that will, allow people to go and get vaccinated.
Dr. LaShawn McKeever, Director of the Office of Minority Health for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Dr. McKeever, thanks so much for taking the time to break all of that down for us. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. And finally, I'm joined by Mayim Bialik, star of Blossom in the early 90s. More recently, she played Amy Fowler on The Big Bang Theory. Currently, she plays Kat on the Fox series Call Me Kat. And as if all of that isn't enough, she's a neuroscientist and author. Thanks so much for taking a few minutes to talk to us, Mayim, during Brain Health Awareness Week. I'm sure I'm not the only one who was surprised to learn that not only did you play a neuroscientist on TV, but you're also one in real life. What was it that piqued your interest in that field?
I guess when I was on Blossom, I fell in love with science. I was a 15-year-old TV actress who also kept up with all of my school academics. And I had a really amazing tutor who literally answered an ad that was posted on a bulletin board at UCLA by the woman who was responsible for my education when I was on Blossom. And this woman answered this ad, and she was a dental student at the time, and she was my biology tutor. And she introduced a way of thinking about science that was so creative and poetic and beautiful and passionate. And I literally fell in love. And I said, when I finish Blossom, I want to study this. I want to learn everything I can in the science field. And I fell in love specifically with the brain and nervous system, and that's what neuroscience is.
You know, I was reading about your thesis, and honestly, I didn't even know what the title meant, let alone what you were laying out. Trying to figure out how to pronounce the words was hard enough. I mean, when it comes to brain health, you know your stuff.
Well, I mean, my field was psychoneuroendocrinology. So yes, I looked at the hypothalamus, which is a structure about the size of four peas, right about in the middle of your brain. And it's connected to the pituitary gland, which a lot of people know about. So it's a really complicated set of hormones that influence behavior throughout the brain and throughout the body. And I, in particular, studied a couple hormones that have a connection to obsessive compulsive disorder. So that was the field of my thesis. And, you know, the thing about a thesis is you become an expert in one very, very specific
right.
thing. So that's what I did.
I'm joined by Mayim Bialik, star of Blossom in the early 90s. You might know her from that. More recently, she played Amy Fowler on The Big Bang Theory. She currently plays Kat on the Fox series Call Me Kat. And she's a neuroscientist here to talk about Brain Health Awareness Week. So, Mayim, what is it that this Brain Health Awareness Week designation aims to accomplish?
Well, you know, obviously tied into the fact that I am a neuroscientist, and although I haven't been employed as a neuroscience professor, which is, you know, what I'm trained to be, the always constant awareness I have of the brain and its role in our lives is something that, you know, doesn't change no matter what profession I have. And so Brain Awareness Week is kind of a week when people like me get to talk to people who may not think about it all the time and point out all the important aspects of the brain, really introducing the idea that just like we take vitamins and eat good things so that our skin looks good and our body feels good and we can go to the gym and work out and our bodies work the way we want them to, the brain is an incredibly important organ that needs its own special support system. And, you know, I've been hesitant to talk about brain health this way because there's so much variability.
Right. And that leads me into another question. How much do we still not really know or fully understand about the brain?
You know, it's a hard question to answer. You know, for some people, they would say, until we find God in the brain, we don't know enough. And right. Some people would say, until we can identify, like, where the soul is in the brain, we don't know enough. You know, I like to think about it that we know enough to be awed, and we know enough to take direction, you know, from what we do know about the brain. And we don't know enough to say that we know enough.
Yeah.
You know, the brain is a really, really complicated, beautiful network of communication. And there will always be things that we don't know. But there are things that, you know, science has brought us to be able to know. And one of those things is knowing how the brain works for cognition, for memory, and also what things we can do to support it.
I'm joined by Mayim Bialik, star of Blossom, The Big Bang Theory, and currently Call Me Kat on Fox. I think sometimes when it comes to the brain, people don't make that connection that you just made, that taking care of it can, in a sense, be like taking care of your skin or your teeth. Have we made advances that really allow us to do that with the brain?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that there will always be kind of the notion of trying to beat the aging curve and, you know, trying to figure out the thing that will keep us young forever. And I think especially in Western culture, that's a hugely important thing. And I totally get that. But what I think is so powerful about Brain Awareness Week, and also for me getting to talk about B12 complex vitamins, those are things that we actually know you should be taking and including into your regimen to keep your brain strong. I mean, that's the thing. We don't think of it like that because we think so much about our muscles, or again, we're driven a lot by like, what do I look like? What should I eat so that I'm thin? You know, and the fact is, your brain is powering everything. It's powering how you feel when you wake up in the morning. It's powering your ability to keep on a mental health regimen, right? Like, that is healthy for all of us. And I think especially in this last year, our brains and our hearts have been tremendously challenged, you know? We're all talking and thinking about it, but there actually are things that you can do to say, I'm giving my brain the best chance to continue being able to focus, to learn. That's also a mental health commitment, to be able to give your brain the ability to have all of its resources to support whatever comes our way. And this year, a lot came our way.
Oh, yeah. And one thing that's taken off recently in a big way, in part because of what we've gone through during the course of the past year, are apps that attempt to help you clear your mind, like these meditation apps, things like that. How effective can they be when it comes to brain health?
I mean, look, I think that, you know, staying active is something that we need to do with our bodies, but we do also need to do it with our brains in terms of focus and concentration and accuracy. Those are real measures of how our brain is functioning. For me, like, I'm a puzzle person. When I do play games or use apps, I do tend to go for the ones that are, you know, kind of more critical thinking ones, or that are puzzles that I need to work out. That's attractive to me. And yeah, it's attractive to me as a neuroscientist. So those things actually do matter. You know, it does. It is something that needs exercise, and also just the commitment that you're going to say that I live in a holistically governed body and brain. And it's not like, what's the magic pill that's going to fix everything? It's what can I do to support an overall system of wanting to be healthier, you know?
And on that point, how much variability is there between different types of people in terms of maybe what they do to improve their brain health? I'm sure, obviously, you know, like you mentioned, there's not a limitless pill for all of us to take, a one size fits all type deal. So can you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question. And also it's a scientifically rigorous one, because this is kind of exactly what science tries to look at. And I mean, it's exactly what we're trying to figure out. What can we claim? What can we say that we can support? And the fact is, there's going to be tremendous variability based on what you eat, how much you sleep, are you drinking caffeine, do you drink alcohol, do you smoke pot, do you smoke cigarettes? Like, there's that tremendous variability. But I think for me, the reason that I stand behind this kind of partnership is that this is a baseline that's necessary to support whatever you do. You're effectively less susceptible to damage from other things in the environment, right? Because you're giving your brain this kind of baseline of support that it really needs. So there is going to be a lot of variability. But, you know, to me, I think of this when you think of multivitamins, right? It's not like only certain people should take things to make sure they have nutrients, or only certain people should eat kale.
Yeah.
Everyone should eat kale, right? So we're trying to level that playing field for your brain.
I'm joined right now by Mayim Bialik, star of Blossom, The Big Bang Theory, and currently Call Me Kat on Fox. She's here to talk about Brain Health Awareness Week. Let me throw one other thing at you. Social media and the internet, the impact that plays on brain health. Positive, negative, bit of a mixed bag. What do you think?
I mean, I think it's a mixed bag. You know, I'm not a social media specialist. I'm not an anthropologist. You know, I'm a mom of a 12 and 15 year old. And so I also see, like, from a parent perspective, how much of their brain power they give away. You know, I remember when I was a teenager, like, the big deal was that, like, we wanted call waiting. And my parents were like, why would you want call waiting? That's so crazy, right? And then it developed to, like, oh, we get a second phone line. So a lot of it is, like, they're part of a culture that is not mine. But as, like, I try to be a hip mom, and I'm a busy mom, and I'm trying to figure it out, I think that in general, I see a mixed bag. My older son in particular is very, very up on Black Lives Matter. He's up on, like, transgender rights. Like, the internet allows him that kind of access.
Yeah.
But the social media aspect can be very damaging, especially to our mental health. You know, all the more reason to give as much protection as we can, you know, in the way that we raise our children, trying to give them a perspective. But yeah, I'd say it's a mixed bag. But one of the reasons I started my podcast during this past year, which is called My Embryonic Breakdown, is that I wanted to sort of tackle mental health, especially because so many of us have become so dependent on it. And especially when we've been in isolation and there's a global pandemic, we're getting all our information from our phones. It's been a really big part of all of us feeling connected and also feeling very disconnected. So it can be both.
Final question for you. How important is it for people to, in a sense, turn things off on occasion? I know, you know, after I dive deep into whatever news story or issue I'm talking about on my show, especially come Friday, I just got to watch some TV. I got to put on Call Me Kat or The Big Bang Theory or something to just take my mind off of everything. How important is that when it comes to brain health?
I mean, look, this is something that, you know, I come from a religious and ethnic tradition that powers down, you know, and have for thousands of years. So the notion of a sabbatical, you know, a Sabbath, is something that is not a religious commitment. It's an emotional one. And a lot of people who are even not, you know, Jewish or of that faith, are realizing the importance of powering down even for an hour. And, you know, you get so used to using your phone all the time.
Mm-hmm.
My kids have to remind me, Mama, we're at the table. And it's like, you forget because it's just like an extension of us now.
Yeah.
But it is so important. It is so critically important. And for some people, it really is just kind of shifting that attention to something that doesn't require the emotional content of the news. You know, I mean, I think the news has contributed to my heartburn and anxiety for sure over the last several years. And for some people, turning to entertainment and something that, I don't want to say mindless, but, you know, not involving cognition is very important. And then, like I said, in our tradition, we power it all down so that your only interactions are essentially with yourself and other people in person, you know, which is harder because it's been very lonely, you know, for those of us who have a religious experience that is part of our community, which I do. It's very hard. You know, our Sabbaths are a little bit lonelier. But it also, it's a time to nap, to do a puzzle, like to take a walk in nature. Like those are, and I live in a city. It's not like I live in, you know, in a mansion with a courtyard. Like I live in a city, but we took city walks and we look at the stores and we look at the houses. And that is important. You know, we have to reset that way.
And real quick, are there any resources related to brain health that you'd recommend people check out if they want to learn more?
Yeah, I mean, look, the internet is such an enormous place, but there are so many resources now. And I think the fact that we're just opening up a conversation makes all of this stuff, you know, more accessible in general. And this is not something for the elite, you know, it's a human right to know about your mental health, to know about your brain health. So that's what I'm happy to be part of.
Mayim Bialik, star of Blossom back in the early 90s. I know I watched it more recently. She played Amy Fowler on The Big Bang Theory. Currently, she's Kat on the Fox series Call Me Kat. And of course, she's a neuroscientist raising awareness for Brain Health Awareness Week. Mayim, a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks so much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
And that's going to do it for us here on iHeartRadio Communities. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back same time, same place next weekend.